It is my great pleasure to welcome Tom Olzak, whose guide dog partner Goliath is, I'm guessing, probably hanging out at his feet right now, or is at least somewhere nearby. Tom is a two-time GDA graduate and also a member of the organization's board of directors, and we are very happy to have you with us this afternoon, Tom. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Wonderful. Well, I think let's just jump in and maybe start with, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Where are you from originally? Where did you grow up? Married, kids, almost like a Cliff Note version of your personal biography.
A little bit of a cheat sheet here, okay?
There you go, yeah.
All right, well, I was born in Sumter, South Carolina, actually Shaw Field Air Force Base. My father was in the Air Force, so I'm not going to go to, you know, talk about all the places we were, but just understand with him being in the Air Force, we moved around a lot. So the place that he retired was in Las Vegas, Nevada in 1962. We had just come home from Japan. So I stayed in Las Vegas from 62 until 1978. I got married in 73. I had a little girl. I didn't. My wife had the little girl. And subsequently, we got divorced, and then I moved to with my daughter. We moved to California in 1978. I went to work in the jewelry business with Gordon's Jewelers. I moved up through the organization from salesperson to regional sales manager, and I supervised 26 stores out here on the West Coast. Was a master gemologist. In 81, I married my current wife, and we've been married ever since. I have two grandsons. I was a gemologist until 1993, and then I was told that I had an eye disease called choroideremia, and I began losing my eyesight, so we had to do some major changes there.
Oh, wow. And can you tell me the name? What was the name of the eye disease again?
My eye disease is called choroideremia. In some aspects, it's very similar to retinitis pigmentosa. There are times when it is misdiagnosed, but it's basically the choroid vessels in my eye are degenerating, and so no blood was getting to the retina, so the retina went south. And then eventually, they diagnosed me in 93. They told me in four years I would be blind. They missed it by two. I ended up losing my eyesight totally in 1997.
Mm. What was that transition like for you?
Originally, it was a pain. I think that you always talk about the five stages of grief and all that good gobbledygook, but I mean, for me, it was fear and anger and all that good stuff because I could no longer provide for my family. I lost my job. I could no longer function. And what do quote unquote people who are blind do? I don't know. I had all the stereotypical ideas of blind people. And they were like, I knew this. I couldn't sing and I couldn't dance. So I was pretty much SOL with that. After about 9 months of sitting at home, feeling sorry for myself, my wife kind of gave me a couple of ultimatums. One was to sit around and being a bum without her or get up off my fanny and be the man I married with her. And that was pretty easy. I went to school. I received a degree in behavioral science from Cal Poly Pomona. Subsequent to that, I went to law school, Western State University College of Law. Graduated from there in 1999, passed the bar 2000, practiced law for 5 years before I got tired of it. But in the meantime, I was dealing with learning how to function as a person with a visual impairment, going from screen magnification to screen reading to reading Braille, et cetera, et cetera. Learning how to walk, orientation, mobility, all that good stuff using a cane.
And so how long did you go through the world using a cane? What was the process like for you as you began to explore the idea of getting a guide dog? Or what was it that made you want to transition from using a cane to using a dog?
Well, I used to call it, because I hated using the term cane, because it just made me feel like a person with a disability. You know, I was trying to, I was still in those days of not wanting to be looked at as a person with a disability. So I was sticking it for about 13 years. I used the white cane for about 13 years. And then a friend of mine, who I met at a support group at Braille Institute, by then I was working for the Braille Institute as a youth and career director, and I was helping manage a support group. He wanted to go to the California Council of Blind Convention, and I really didn't want to go. And the reason being is because, as I told him, I don't think being around 1,500 people who can't see with sticks in their hand beating the heck out of me is a lot of fun. But he got a little depressed, and so I said, okay, let's go. And while we were there, I met Andy Crusoe and the director of training for Guide Dogs of America. There were two other schools there, too, Sing, I, and GDB. But I kind of enjoyed talking to Andy. And then because I asked her, well, how much better can it be? Because I get along pretty good. She said, well, I can't tell you, but I've got a head trainer here. Come back in 30 minutes. He'll tell you. So I did. And I asked him the same question, well, how much better can it be? He said, well, I can't tell you. And I said, well, then, you know, why am I here, right? And he said, but I tell you what, I got a big German Shepherd here who likes to work. How would you like to test drive a dog? So this was at the LAX Marriott there at Century Boulevard. So we went outside, and he told me a few commands and how to hang on to the handle and the harness, and the operative word there was hang on. The dog's name was Flight. And he said, he said, go ahead and tell Flight forward. So when I said forward, I thought we were going to take a little jaunt, right? A little stroll down the thing. This dog took off like a bat out of heck. I mean, my arm went straight out. I looked like Ichabod Crane following this dog because I didn't realize it was going to go that fast. And finally he stopped, and Bob said, put your foot out. And I did. He said, there's the curb. What do you think, dude? And I leaned over and started petting the dog. And then I thought, oh my God, I'm doing something wrong. He said, no, it's good. So we walked for about 45 minutes. I was in a suit and a tie, by the way, in my cowboy boots. And when we got done after about 45 minutes of walking, I had totally trashed my suit because it was soaked through. And I knelt down, was talking to Flight, and I looked up at my friend and I said, do me a favor, call my wife and tell her I'll see her in 28 days. I'm going to go get me a dog.
Wow.
And, you know, when people ask you, why do you do that? I said, because in that 45-minute walk, Stephanie, it was the first time in my life I had felt the wind in my face, and it wasn't because the wind was blowing. It was because I was moving that fast. It was just, I didn't stop grinning until I came to the school in April. They finally accepted me and got me hooked up, and we started.
Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome. So that's where it all started.
Yep. I haven't stopped smiling since, and it's been about 16, 17 years now, so I'm on my second guide dog.
That's wonderful. What would you say, I mean, help us understand, what are the main differences between navigating through the world with a cane versus navigating through the world alongside a dog?
There's a couple of metaphors that can be used, but the bottom line is this. When you're walking with a cane, it's tactile. You're feeling everything, right? I mean, you feel the ground, you constant contact, tap and drag, whatever you're using to function at that time. But everything is done by feel. You feel the obstacle in front of you. You feel the down curb. And I equate that to driving a Volkswagen bus, okay? It's very serviceable, get you from point A and point B, but it ain't very cool. You know what I'm saying? And then with a service animal, with a guide dog, you are now walking by sight, all right? Not my sight, but his sight. He's the one that gets you around the obstacles, or she. he's the one to let you know that there's a tree above your head there and you need to stop so you don't eat the tree, when the down curve is there, etc. So you're walking by sight and you're moving with this dog at a speed that is quote unquote like the way that I used to walk. So I equate that to driving a Ferrari. Now, not only are you looking cool, but you're getting there with style, baby. So it's a totally different thing on the way that you work. And I will tell you this. I have much more trust when Goliath, when I say forward Goliath, that I'm not going to, he's not going to put me in harm's way than I do with my cane, because those were decisions I'm making. Sure. You know, even when I make a boo-boo at a down curve and say, okay, let's go, and he sees a car coming, okay, intelligent disobedience, man. He will not let me cross the street. So I feel much safer walking with my guide dog, with Goliath right now, than walking with a cane. I hope that gives you some idea.
Yeah. I would think, too, that when you're trying to navigate with a cane, it seems that you're always looking for the things that are going to be hazardous, versus trusting that your dog will get you around them. And I would imagine to some degree that's exhausting.
It is. It's not like you can go out and enjoy a walk, because you're constantly, you know, thinking and you're constantly saying, gosh, am I going to go off a cliff? Am I going to hit a barrier? Do I have my hand up in case I hit a tree or whatever? That was one of the other biggest things. I'm glad you brought that up, because now I get up every morning with Goliath and we take a walk. We walk anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour every morning. It is an enjoyable walk. We get out there, I get to listen to the birds, and we get to cruise, and we get to say hi to people, and get to, you know, beat my little horn as I, you know, let people know I'm coming. And there's a group of little old ladies that like to go out and power walk, and we get to walk between them, and they say, here comes Goliath, you know. They don't even say me, they say, here comes Goliath. So there you go.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. You know, we always talk about how a guide dog or a service dog will help, you know, transform lives, and typically, most obviously, we're thinking of the life of the guide dog recipient, the guide dog user. But I know I've heard you talk a little bit before about how much Goliath has changed things for your family as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I always use an example. It's a military expression, but it's called a force multiplier. And that's basically what Goliath and Wrigley have been for me, in that they don't just, everybody thinks about guide dogs changing the lives of the people that are, you know, the end user, but they don't think about the family, you know, my wife, my daughter, my grandkids, my friends, my coworkers at work, people that I meet in a mall. They don't realize how Goliath affects them. I'm going to give you a quick example, okay? When I was walking with a cane, and like I told you, I did that for 13 years. Every time I would leave the house, my wife would be on pins and needles, wondering if I was going to make it home or I was going to banana out in the middle of a street and get hit by a car using my cane. Two magic words changed that whole dynamic. And it was Goliath, forward, or Wrigley, forward. She knew that those dogs would never put me in a position or put me in harm's way, and that when I was out walking, I was going to be totally safe. That gave her peace of mind. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, you cannot put a price tag on peace of mind for someone who cares for you. From that point on, it was kind of like, she just basically kicked Goliath and I to the curb and say, hey, I'm out, let me know when you get home type thing. So it was peace of mind. And I like I said, you can't put a price tag on that, Stephanie.
Right. That makes sense. Sure. What, you know, you've gone through class twice now. You're on dog number two. And what's that moment like when you're sitting in your dorm room waiting to meet your dog?
It's like Heinz 57. You remember that commercial, anticipation? You know, you sit there and you're there and you're nervous and you're excited. You've already been there for 3 days, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and you get your dog Wednesday afternoon. And all of a sudden you hear the knock at the door. Now, when both of them were quite amazing, but on the second one, Goliath, he came in like a ball of fire, and he came up and hit me like a ton of bricks, and I was sitting on the floor, and I remember him telling me, and by the way, my dogs talk to me all the time, but I remember him looking at me and saying, "Hey, dude, forget about Wrigley. I'm here. I'm the baddest man on the planet, and nothing's ever going to happen to you on my watch."
Aww.
it was the start and the beginning of a great relationship, and the interesting thing was, I thought after having a dog for 12 years that this was going to be a piece of cake, but it's amazing how differently the dogs move and they interact and their personalities. I remember Yvonne Martin told me, she said, "Thomas, it's going to be the same, but it's going to be different." And it has been the same, but it's been different because Goliath has brought his personality to the game. And it's just, it's been a ball, but it was exciting that day. And then after that, it becomes tentative. And then you start kind of getting with the way that the trainers, work with you, you start getting kind of a feel for it. And you guys start, you don't become a team until later on after 6 months or so after the dog. But you finally, at that point, you become this unit, it's like unbelievable. You don't know where your hand stops and the harness starts. And you can tell by the way he moves his head which way he's going to go or what he's going to do and things like that. It's just, it's hard for me to express how cool it is for me. And I know that it is a lot of responsibility, because when I get home, I don't just throw a cane in the corner. I have to feed, water, relieving, take him outside, brush him. And then for 15 minutes we play. And then when I get done with that, then I come in and I get to take care of myself. So it's a lot of responsibility, but for me and for my wife and my friends, all my family, it is so well worth it. Plus, no matter where I go, I'm never by myself. I got my best friend with me. It's very cool.
Right. I'm sure it's a very special relationship that you have with the dog.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's hard to explain. I don't like saying that it's the only thing in my life that I've ever truly loved, but in some aspects it really is, because there's a trust between him and I. He doesn't come with an agenda. All he wants me to do is love him, feed him, and have fun with him, and let's go work.
Nice.
That's it. It's really, really neat. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And of course, when Goliath came bounding in when you first met him, and he might have come in saying, "Hey, forget about Wrigley, we're a team now." I would imagine that as a guide dog user, you never forget about, prior dogs. Can you tell us maybe a little bit about that, about, the process of making that decision to retire a dog? And then did Wrigley go back to his puppy raisers?
Yeah, that was I had Wrigley for 12 years, which was a long time for a working guide dog. And it finally got to a point where, it was just being too stressful for him. And according to the people there, him and I we'd been working together so much, it was overcompensating. And I remember when they told me that they were going to do the assessment, they said, "Are you going to want to hear what I want to say?" And I said, "No, I don't, but I'm going to have to, And so we made the decision to retire him. And that went fairly smoothly. When I said it, it was like, okay, we're going to retire Wrigley. Now, I was working at the time, and I couldn't leave Wrigley at home all day in the house, because I was leaving the house at 5:30 in the morning and not getting home until 6, 7:30 at night. And by then, he was also having issues where I had to take him out a lot to relieving. So we got hooked up, and GDA has a wonderful foster care looking for people for puppies, and although Wrigley was 14, he wasn't a puppy, but they came to pick him up, and I had everything ready. I had his bag, half a bag of food there, and his blanket and his bowls. Everything in a bag. It was ready to go and all that good stuff. Now, in the prescriptions of this is when I did my first night vision walk or night walk with Wrigley, again, I knelt down with him because I was petrified and said, hey, dude, you're going to have to take care of me. And Wrigley was sitting there and I put my hand on his neck and he put his paw over my forearm. He used to do that all the time. And I said, okay, dude, this is, you're going to have to take care of me. And he was the first one that said, don't worry about it. Nothing's going to happen to you on my watch. Okay, bear with me for a minute here. And then the day they picked him up, we loaded everything into the car and I was fine. Then I knelt down and he was sitting there and I did the same thing. And he put his paw over my forearm and he said, I kept my promise. And then I cried like a big baby. I believe, you know, I'm old school where you know, it's 6'3", you know, you big guys don't cry. That's a rule. And I probably hadn't cried since I was 5 years old. And it was unabashed, not sniffles. It was crying like a big baby. It was probably one of the most traumatic things. And at that point, I thought, I don't know whether I want to get another guide dog or not, because this is unbelievably traumatic. I didn't realize it was going to be this traumatic. About 3 weeks later, I made the decision to get another guide dog because I was walking around with my cane and I was walking around like a drunken sailor running into things. I said, no, this is not working. So we made the decision, but it was very, very traumatic. And I know that Yvonne Martin, who's the director of programs, was really worried at the time whether I was going to be able to take to another dog because I was so close to Wrigley. But it worked out with G, and like I said, it's the same but different. So it all worked out. And do I still miss Wrigley? Sure, because he was my first and he was special. But do I have a great relationship with Goliath? You bet. I wouldn't trade him in for love nor money.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. Now, I've heard it said that a guide dog can also serve as a little bit of like a social bridge, maybe between the blind and the sighted worlds. Have you found that to be true? Do you find that more people come up and maybe want to start a conversation with you when you're standing next to a dog than before when you were standing with a cane? And if so, how do you feel about that?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's one of the amazing things when I go, because with what I do for GDA and things of that nature and with Western University, where I'm a resource specialist there, I talk to a lot of people. I go to a lot of conferences and things of that nature. And before with a cane, I would walk in and I'd probably be pretty much alone, you know, and couldn't figure. With a guide dog, I have more people walk up to me and say hi. Not because they want to talk to me, but because they see Goliath and he's a hunk. And I've said this before that in 13 years of using a white cane, and being in the malls, no one ever came up to me and said to me, "Hey, dude, that's a totally bitchin' white cane you got there." But with Goliath and with Wrigley, people come up. Everybody has a dog story. If I'm sitting in a mall, my wife will attest to this. She'll be in doing her thing, and within 15 minutes, there'll be three or four people standing around me talking to me. Do I mind that? No, because I'm a very social person. One of the nice things about having a big marshmallow like Goliath is that we're so approachable and that people will come up and talk to me. And they will ask me questions about, you know, having a guide dog and what's it like being blind, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's a time also to be able to educate people, which I think is very, very cool, because a lot of people really don't know that much about what a guide dog will do for you, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a good time to educate people about guide dog etiquette, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a perfect transition. Let's talk about service dog etiquette for a second. I think it's probably safe to say that, you know, pretty much everyone within the GDA community understands the importance of not interrupting and distracting or, you know, otherwise interfering with a working guide dog or service dog of any type. But can you tell us a little bit why that's so important as a guide dog user? What's it like for you? What's your experience you know, when you can tell maybe that Goliath is being distracted by someone or something?
It is one of the key factors that you deal with, because again, Goliath is a big marshmallow. I mean, I have been told he is a very handsome dude, and I guess if people can, some of them out there can see, they can see he's just a good looking dog. I call him the Wonder Mutt. But people will you know, come up and want, the downside is when he gets distracted, someone says, "Hey, puppy," and he turns his head, I could end up kissing a tree, or running into a pole, or missing a down curb and falling and getting hurt. So it's very, very important as you're doing this that you educate people that you know what they can and can't do with a service animal. And it's ironic. I have a sign on my dog: "Please ignore me. I'm a working guide dog." And I've gone to professional, you know, dealing with lawyers, doctors, you would think that can read very well, and don't. They'll come up and go, "Hey, dude," and start reaching down, talking to the dog. Mm-hmm. Now, I've learned over time to be patient and not say, "Don't touch my dog," you know, but I'll just say, you have that conversation. "Look, my dog is in harness. That means he's working. When he's working, he's not approachable, okay? Because it keeps me safe. If he gets distracted, I can get hurt." So it's a time to educate. You let people know what they can and what they can't do. And if you do it the right way without being militant about it, and more educational and informational, then they appreciate it. And it's funny because from that point on, I've had people that I've told that to that were walking out of, you know, the facility, and their little kid was with them or something, and they'll say, "Oh, no, don't go touch that dog. He's a working animal," you know? Mm-hmm. And I've told people, "Look, if I'm sitting down and there's a little kid, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, they want to come over and see Goliath, just ask me first. And then I'll give him the command to stay. And if, as long as I give him a command, they can pet him, but they have to ask me first." But it's when I'm walking that people whistle at him or something like that, that can be very, very dangerous. So at that point, you know, you try to educate people the best you can, but, it's hard for people to see a beautiful dog and not, you know, say things and stuff like that. Walking through airports and things like that, you will always hear people, say things or whatever. But in the long run, I think people are getting more and more attuned to the fact that when they see me walking with Goliath, that they pretty much understand what they need to do. And, you know, around Western U, it's pretty much ingrained. I've been very fortunate there that they have given me the platform to do a Zoom lecture on guide dog etiquette so that the students as well as instructors understand, you know, what the parameters are.
Well, it's great that you mentioned Western U, and I think this is a good opportunity to maybe back up for a second so that you can share with us. I know GDA does keep you pretty busy out with speaking engagements and such, but when you're not out representing GDA, tell us a little bit about your role at Western U.
Okay, well, I as you know, Stephanie, I'm retired and have been for the past 3 or 4 years. And I tried retiring once before. It didn't take. After 4 months, I went back to work. but this time I had a plan. One was to let GDA know that, you know, I'm retired, so I'm available for whatever. And at the same time, I talked to the chief of vision rehabilitation, Dr. Pang, over at Western University, and offered my services. And she basically said, "Well, send me your CV, et cetera, and we'll talk." Well, I did. And, you know, I worked at the Braille Institute Junior Blind for, you know, 17 years. And my whole thing there was transition and assisting people with putting the tools in their toolbox to be successful and learn how to be successful as a person that is visually impaired. And so I had a lot of experience doing that, as well as being the founding president of the Foundation Fighting Blindness and all the other resources that I was aware of, from practical application to learning them as I went. So I began working there. They had never had a volunteer or what I do. I'm a resource specialist. And so we began putting together all of the protocols, all of the fact sheets and resource sheets and things of that nature. One of them is guide dog etiquette and community resources. I help people navigate the Department of Rehabilitation, SSI, SSDI, et cetera, et cetera. And really what it's about is a holistic approach to medicine when it comes to low vision, because really telling someone that they could possibly go blind or that they could no longer drive or whatever is pretty traumatic. And so what we try to do from not just a medical standpoint, but also allow them to have the tools in the toolbox so they can understand that being visually impaired or blind is not a death knell, that you can be successful, that you can live a good quality of life. Now, all of the doctors there know a lot of the things that I talk to or talk to the patients about. But as Dr. Pang once said to me, she said, the reason that you are successful and the reason that people open up to you is you come here with street cred. I can tell them the same thing, and it doesn't mean anything, but you can tell them that, and because you've been through it, and you've been successful, and you can be an example of what can happen once you lose your eyesight, then it's easier for them to accept and to move forward. And so I've been working or volunteering, because I volunteer my time at Western U for the past 3 years. And at the same time, they give me the platform to lecture to, I do 5 lectures a year to the third and second year students, anywhere from assistive technology, the psychosocial impact of losing one's eyesight, guide dog etiquette, community resources, advocacy and community resources, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really a lot of fun, and it's a way for me to give back and think that, I'm actually continuing to help people become successful. And that's, kind of that whole thing about paying it forward and that stuff. And it gives me things to do. And so I really enjoy it. I really enjoy it.
What a wonderful opportunity to be able to share your story with people and to have that. I mean, that you have that street cred. I can totally see that making such a big difference for people.
Yep. Well, and the other thing too is there's people who come in there extremely low vision that are using a cane, and one of the things that we ask people before they come into my office is, number one, are they allergic to dogs? Number two, are they afraid of them? Because there's going to be a service animal guide dog in there. Mm-hmm. And before normally I can even start talking to them, they will sit down and say, so is your guide dog in here? Yes, he is. What's his name? How did you get your guide dog? And they start talking about, the criteria of getting a service animal, a guide dog. And of course, in my community resource summary where we list all of these resources, Guide Dogs of America is listed there as a resource for individuals. So it's again, it gives another opportunity to educate people and to let them know how they can be more independent.
Nice. What do you wish that people who were sighted knew or remembered or would be a little bit more mindful of when interacting with the blind and visually impaired communities?
That's pretty easy, that I'm not brain dead. It is amazing how when you are a person with a disability or a person with vision loss, that if, I'll give you an example, we go into, this was in the early stages, go into a restaurant and the waitress will come up and she saw me walk in with my white cane, so she knows I have an issue, and she will get my wife's order, and then she will ask my wife, what would he like to have? And my wife said, I don't know, ask him. And then the waitress will start very slowly, hello, and speak loudly and say, what would you like to have? And I'm like, well, one, I'd like you to tone it down a bit because I can hear real good. And if you continue to raise your voice, I'm already blind. I don't really want to be, you know, deaf also. And you can talk to me in a normal speech. I'm not mentally irregular. I'm not challenged. I just can't see. Everything else works. So the biggest thing is that I wish people would stop thinking that just because you are a person with a disability that they have to treat you with kid gloves. Or when people say something like, oh, did you watch this on TV? Oh, I'm sorry. You know, dude, I watch TV every day, you know. So I wish people would kind of understand that really I'm not any different than anybody else, I function pretty well, and that they can talk to me in a normal voice and not have to treat me like a person with kid gloves and have to tap dance around all this political correctness stuff. You know, if it bothers me, I'll let them know, just like I would if I was sighted. If something bothers me, I'll let somebody know. But most of the time, it goes pretty soon. So that would be the biggest thing, I think, for me, is to let people know I'm just a normal person that is trying to get along and can function just as well as anybody.
Do you find that people have a tendency to acknowledge the dog before they acknowledge you? I mean, I've heard that can sometimes happen, but I don't know if that's a common experience.
Not sometimes. One of the things when you get a guide dog,
Whoops, Tom, your audio's cutting out a little bit. I don't know if you're...
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry.
That's better.
One of the things that is important is that... I lost my train of thought.
Talking to the dog before talking to you.
Is that literally people will you have to become a very humble person because you're going to play second fiddle most of the time. I know that there are many times when people don't even remember my name, but they will remember Goliath's name. Hey, Goliath, how you doing, buddy? And you're, oh, yeah, I think, you know, whatever. I'll give you a quick story. In that back in the day when I was in the legal field, I had clients at Rancho Los Amigos. And Wrigley and I walked in there, and we had to walk down a hall to a security gate, you know, that kind of thing, to get that stuff taken care of. And when I did that, they had to, you know, put a badge on me. They wrote my name on it, you know, and I gave them my business card. And for fun, they put a little badge on for Wrigley, and we walked in. 2 days later, I had to come back for a conference, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or another to see my clients. And at that point, when I was walking up there, and I could hear the security guard say, hey, Susie or Debbie, here comes the blind guy in Wrigley. She had forgot my name, but she remembered Wrigley's name. And I always thought that was funny.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I bet that can happen frequently.
All the time. I mean, I could give you a million different stories about how people will remember, will say hi to the dog first before they do you. Even when they're walking by my office, they'll say, hey, Goliath, how you doing? And then, oh, hey, Tom, how you doing? You know, so it's like you said, become very humble, because like when I get invited to conferences, you know how when they send out the invitation? It's to Goliath plus one. I'm the plus one.
Oh,
so there you
go. Here's plus one. Oh, my. This reminds me of how I know I've heard Greg Steinmetz say multiple times, people will ask him if his other senses are now enhanced, you know, since he's lost his vision. And I think his response is typically, well, my sense of humor had to get much better.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think everybody has. That's another one of those misconceptions or myths that as soon as you lose your eyesight, you become daredevil, you know, so you can hear someone's heartbeat or you can, you know, it's amazing, you know, and albeit you do use them, you know, it's just because you have to now because you can't see. So you have to use your hearing. You have to use your spatial awareness. But I'll have to steal that one from Greg on, yeah, my sense of humor has gotten a lot better.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, this has been fantastic. And I could honestly sit and chat with you all day, but I see that we've got some questions coming into the Q&A feed here. And I want to make sure we give our audience a chance to chime in. So I'm going to bring Carolyn and Hannah back into the mix here.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hopefully Carolyn everybody. And Hannah.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Doing well, Carolyn.
Good. I'm going to go through the Q&A, and then I think Hannah probably has some comments that she'll want to give to you as well. So a couple, the first thing, this was one of the first ones, so they noticed it right away, that you have a broadcast voice, and you should go into broadcasting or something, because your voice is like so easy to listen to, and your storytelling, and yeah. Great.
I was completely thinking that this morning that I want to hear Tom read me the news. Well, maybe not the news right now, but normally, under normal circumstances, I would love to hear Tom reading the news every day.
Yeah, well, the news now would be great, too, because it at least it'd come across a little nicer.
Yeah, well, I have been told that I have a face made for radio, so there you go.
I don't know if we'd be able to go that far, but a broadcast voice, yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yes, and then the first question that came in is asking if you do training with your dog. So we know that Goliath does, he guides you, but are there times when you have to actually kind of train with him as well?
Yeah. And that's a constant thing because he is a dog. Now, when we're at class, we're taught a sequence of events, you know, like that we go through with them. And it's something that I still do with Goliath every day. When I feed, water, relieve him in the morning, we stop and take a couple of minutes, and he gets next to my leg and he sits. And I'll tell him, sit. And then I'll tell him, down, good boy, sit, good boy, down, good boy. And then I'll make him sit again, and then I'll say, stay. And I'll walk the long leash, walk away from him, say, stay. Then I'll walk back over and we'll go through that down sit. And then I'll say, stay again. Then when I get out to the end, I'll say, Wrigley or Goliath, come, and I'll pat my leg, and then he'll come over and then he'll go right around my leg and then sit down, and I'll say, good boy, always with the praise. I do that every day with him. That gives him a sense of knowing that I'm in control and that he still listens to my commands. The other thing is, there are times when we are walking, especially in tight places or something like that, where he may rub me up against a pole or even a person. And this is another way where people get a large charge out of it. But if I bump into a person with my elbow or something because he didn't get the width right, I will stop. And I'll look at the person and say, excuse me, I'm sorry. Can you do me a favor? I need to train my dog and you can help me. Would you do that for me? And I tell him what I'm going to do. You know, I make him sit, I pat and say, no, no, no. I back up and then I'll say, okay, Goliath, forward. And then he'll edge me around them. We get around him. I'll say, good boy. And then normally you will hear the people go clap or say, yay, Goliath or something. But it's a constant thing that you have to reinforce with them. So you don't ever stop training them because every once in a while they'll make a mistake.
Gotcha. I think you have about 71 people on this this webinar that would be willing to help you anytime you needed to train Goliath. Cool. Thank you. That answers that question really good. There's another question that came in is if he stops, like there's an obstacle, how do you know whether you need to duck or you need to step down?
There's a process that you go through, Carol Ann, and the first thing is if he stops, the first thing I do is I get up on his shoulder, and then I put my left foot out, extend it out about a foot and a half, 2 feet, to probe with my foot to see, okay, is that a down curve? Is that a crack in the sidewalk? What? Normally, he's within 2 inches of the down curve or the crack, so it's really easy. If it's not that, then I'm a good Catholic boy, and so I do the old dummies there to the San Compadre. So it's like I reach up with my hand first, okay, and then I reach down, and I reach left and right. So up, down, left, and right, you know, Father, Son, Holy Ghost, and somewhere along the line, you will find something. If I reach up, boom, there's a tree, I know, and I say, good boy, Everything is with praise, okay? To this day, I never just take it for granted. If I move my hand to the left and there's a car there or something, I'll say good boy or right or whatever. I know where it is, and then I can move forward. So it is a system that is taught by the trainers there at GDA, and they go through it with you to ensure that you know how to do that. In fact, they have we did one here a little recently with Goliath. There's a little obstacle course that we went through that he did to demonstrate that type of function.
Cool. That is, you know, that I'm learning stuff here too. That's great. He is like a Superman. On the Superman note, a question came in and wondering if Goliath, if you lost something like in your house, so let's say you can't find your house keys, does he know how to assist you with getting those things?
Like, no, that part, no. I have to sit there and I have to look around. There are a couple of other ways that I can do that now. Now with like my phone, I just say, hey, Siri, what time it is? And it will tell me, and I'll say, okay, it's over there. But keys or something like that, no, he can't do that. There are other ways that I do that. But unfortunately, I wish he could. He's just about that good, but not quite.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that keeps your memory alive, right? You got to remember where you put those house keys.
That's one of the things when you are a person with a visual impairment. Or have lost your sight, you by definition have to become very organized because everything has to be in the same spot, you know, so you don't have to look for it. Whether it's in the way I hang my suits or I put my underwear and stuff and my socks in the drawer and all that, everything is in a certain way so that I know where it's at, and then I've got a labeling system for it.
I need to take some lessons from you. great. That answers that question. Thank you. And then wondering just somebody that is using a cane, so they don't have a guide dog. Do you think it's a little different? Like, would they appreciate being asked if they need help? Or when you had a cane, did you prefer for people just to sort of give you your space so you could feel with your cane where things were?
It depends on what I'm doing. A lot of times, you know, I would just prefer to do it on my own. But if I'm out in a street or something like that and someone will come up and say, hey, would you like some assistance crossing the street? Sure, no problem. Or if I'm in a mall and I, you know, don't know where the Apple store is, I can ask them, where's the Apple store? And they can do one of two things. They can either say, well, I can assist you when I had a cane, I can assist you in getting there if you would like, or this is the other thing that is one of those pet peeves. It's over there. Well, you know, like, what does over there mean to me? You know, I don't know. So it's one of those things. But yeah, I don't mind people asking me. And then I would prefer that than them just coming up and grabbing hold of my arm and started dragging me. I make it very clear to people. I don't like to be touched unless you tell me that you're coming or you're putting your hands on me, because I can have a really strange reaction to someone that I don't know or I'm not aware of coming up and grabbing my arm. Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's just really about, you know, and there are a lot of people out there that have no problem giving you assistance. And then again, it's a point of education. You can then say, well, because they can say, well, how do we do this? And when I was working, well, we'll do human guide, and this is what we'll do. And you educate them on, okay, my hand's down here. Put the back of your hand on my hand, and then I'll move my hand up to your elbow, and I'll hold on. That way, I'm not just grabbing. As a person that can't see, it is not a good idea to just start sticking your hands out and grabbing. That ain't a good idea. So it's a proper way of doing sighted guide. So yeah, long explanation for I don't mind assistance as long as people ask and they're sincere about it.
Gotcha. And if you were going to give us advice to somebody using a cane, it's probably then just sort of ask them, do you feel like most people would rather just have someone that's sighted ask them if they need help?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. There's if you're using a cane, a lot of times people will ask, you know, do you need some assistance? And if you do, tell them. If not, say no, I got this.
Gotcha.
But you know, there's nothing wrong with. I mean, it doesn't make you inferior or defective if someone comes up to offer assistance. That's just being polite and courteous, the way that I look at it. Some people may take offense to it, but I don't.
Yeah. And I think the takeaway is it's, we probably wouldn't go up and just grab somebody that had vision. So why would we do that to somebody that didn't? Just.
Yeah. You can't see this, but I'm nodding my head. Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Yes.
There's actually a very active hashtag on Twitter that's just ask, don't grab. And it's a facet of the disability community that posts about these kinds of things all the time. And it's amazing to me the number of run-ins people have where well-meaning citizens who are wanting to help, you know, are either ignorant to that fact or just forget the fact that it's far more appropriate to ask first before you just reach out and grab somebody.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've even had it with Goliath and an access driver. Okay. Now, this is access paratransit. These people are supposed to understand and been trained how to work with persons with disabilities or persons with, you know, an eyesight problem. Right. And I'm standing there and on my route, it says, please approach. Well, a guy comes up and he says, hi, access. I said, yep. And he said, okay, my car's over here. He came up and he grabbed Goliath by the harness and started to drag Goliath. I said, dude, you know, what is this, man? Don't touch my dog. He'll get me where I need to go. If I need some assistance, I'll ask you. But don't ever put your hands on my dog or my harness and start dragging him around. That's not cool at all. But that's only happened twice.
Gotcha. So Goliath is your travel partner. Do you use any other things like Google Maps or anything to find your way about the world?
Yeah, I use a couple of different things. Goliath is the biggie. He's the high-tech end of this. But on my phone, I have an app called Blind Square, and it is a GPS system, and it's designed specifically for people that are visually impaired or blind. And it's very intuitive. It's easy to get around. It's totally accessible. And so when I get up and walk, and Stephanie has seen me with these now. In fact, I'm talking with them now. I have a pair of Bose sunglasses, audio sunglasses. And they Bluetooth to my phone. So I can hear things as I'm walking, but still hear ambient noise. And I'll turn on Blind Square. And when I begin my walk, it will tell me things as I'm walking. Okay, you're going north on Hamilton Boulevard. And then it will tell me every once in a while, about every 500 feet, you're passing 654th North Hamilton, 75 feet in front that, you know, you're getting near an intersection, you know, blah, blah, blah. It tells you the intersection. So that helps me out a lot. I can also, set it up so that if I know where I'm going, I can do a pedestrian route to get there and listen to it and it'll get me there. It may not get me right to the door, you know what I mean, but it'll get me close enough that I'll be able to find out where I'm going. So I use that part of it, GPS, a lot, especially when I'm out taking my walk with Goliath. The other thing that I use, and Stephanie, you were there when I used it at the train station. It's an app called Aira. And this is an app that costs $29 a month for Explorers. It can go up to $89 a month, et cetera, et cetera. But I've got the Explorer one. And what you do is you call Aira. They have trained volunteers, and I've got my glasses on, and I put my phone on a little chest piece that I have that holds my phone and the camera facing outwards. And I talk to them and say, listen, I'm at the train station. I need to get to the eastern part of the terminal. How do I get there? And she was able to direct me on how to get there and get where we needed to go that day. And I just asked Stephanie, I said, I know we can do this quicker, but let's have some fun here. And we did it. And she got me around. Same thing when I was in LAX. It's a access free thing. So when I'm at LAX, I can use access for, or Aira for free. And I had to there was a delay. So I had to get Goliath relieved. And so I called Iris and said, here's where I'm at. Where's the nearest, relieving area? And she says, she pulled up a thing, says, got you covered. And then she told me it was a ways away, but she got me right to where I needed to go to relieve Goliath, and then got me back to the gate and all that good stuff. I could have, if I wanted to, I guess, asked for, stood up and started waving my arms and asked for assistance, but this was another way of doing it. It's really, really good, and they've done it now such that they can help you out with a lot of things, and it's free now. So a lot of them are free. So like the first 5 minutes I use it, it's free. So if I call an Uber ride, they can actually set up my Uber ride, and then they will tell me when the Uber ride is pulling up, and things like that. So it's great. So you lose a lot of different things to help, but nothing ever supplants your own common sense, good, solid orientation and mobility instruction, so that you know cardinal directions and you know how to get around. Because if you don't, your dog's not going to do it. You need to know where you're going, because you work as a team now. He'll get you there so you don't run into things and stuff, but you need to let him know, well, we're going to go right here, dude, or left. Other than, like, when I go to work, he knows right where my office is. So he takes me right there. I don't have to do it. I can be asleep, and he'll get me to my office.
Well, and that just sort of, like, brings us into the next question, that do you think younger people are they see the benefits of guide dog, or do you feel like they're like, no, I'm just going to use my phone to get everywhere?
I think it's a mixed bag in today's world. I know that that type of stuff was happening with when I was at the Braille Institute and Junior Blind of America, working with, at Braille, kids from 6 to 18, and from 30 on, 18 to 30, et cetera. But a lot of them are using the technology that's out there on their phones and things like that. But I think this, I think that, again, it's a personal choice as to whether you want to have a service animal or not. I think it's still a mixed bag. Those people who want to use a cane will use their phones. That will be it. But then those people who want a service animal for other reasons other than just getting them around, the companionship, the social icebreaking with it, et cetera, feeling safe, having people around them feel safe, is still going to be there. It's like learning to read Braille. People say to me all the time, well, why do you want to learn Braille? You can do everything, auditorially, especially with these kids coming up, learning their lessons. And my saying that is that being literate is important. If you're listening to something, how does that teach you how to conjugate a sentence? How does it teach you how to spell, et cetera, et cetera? So learning how to read Braille and learning how to conjugate a sentence and becoming literate is important. Orientation, mobility, same thing. But it's a choice, because, again, having a service animal is a lot of responsibility. Now, I will say this, that one of the things that I did, and this is not me being chauvinistic, but when I was talking to my younger students, 16, 17, 18, that were female, I recommended having a service animal because of a couple of things, Carolina and Stephanie. One, when you walk with a guide dog, because they automatically pull, you straighten up and your shoulders are back and you are walking down the street confidently. You don't look like a victim. A lot of people who use a cane slouch, and it's just a natural reaction, and they don't walk confidently with a cane. The second thing is, if you are a young lady, you are less likely to be a victim if you have a 75 or 55 or 65-pound dog walking with you, because these people don't know what that guide dog is going to do. They're going to say, I'm going to leave her alone. I'll find someone else to try to tap dance with. So as far as safety, I recommend that. But again, I think it all goes down to choice. And I don't think that phones and electronics is ever going to surpass the companionship that you have with a service animal, the bonding that you have with them, the love that you have for them, and the sense of touch. When I'm having a bad day, I can sit on a floor and Goliath will come over and put his head on my lap, and I can sit there and pet him and feel better. You can't put a price tag on that. I won't tell you another story that was really funny, but about that same thing, but we're probably running short of time. But yeah, I think, again, I don't think that phones and technology is ever going to replace having a service. They are another tool that is in the toolbox that you use. And the more tools you have, the more independent you can be.
Gotcha. So things are just adding to your independence, but Goliath is still a big part of it.
It's huge. I think, is it, you know, it's like getting metaphor, example. If you're a carpenter, right, and you're going to go out and build a house, how good a house can you build if you take a hammer and saw? But if you go out there with a hammer, a saw, a nail gun, a router, all of the tools that you're going to need to build that house, how good a house are you going to build? It's the same thing being a person with a disability or a person that is visually impaired. The more tools you have in your toolbox, the more successful you're going to be, and the more, or the better the quality of life you're going to be. So everything works in conjunction. It's all about filling that toolbox. Goliath is one of the tools, even though he is a special tool, and I love him to death. He's one of the other tools that goes in with good orientation and mobility skills. It goes in with good daily living skills. It goes in with good computer skills, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Education. All of those things are going to make you a well-rounded person. It is no different than a person that does not have a disability. How good are you going to be, or how successful are you going to be, if you don't put the tools in your toolbox to be successful? Education. Schooling, internships, volunteering, all those things that it takes to be successful.
Yeah.
I got on a soapbox there for a minute. I'm sorry.
Well, no, we appreciate that soapbox, because I'm sure a lot of these people on the call are raisers. So it's just awesome for them to hear, makes them feel really ambitious to continue puppy raising, we hope.
Definitely.
So I sure hope so.
Yeah. Stephanie, do you think just one more question?
I think so. We're over an hour here. I know, Caroline, you've got a puppy class tonight that we need to get you into. And Tom, you've been so extraordinarily generous with your time. I do want to mention, Tom, that Laura Mino says hi. Looks like she's out there in the audience.
Hello. Tell Laura Mino. Oh, my God. Hello, Laura. Goliath is doing well.
So great.
Everybody might have just figured out
that
Laura is
so cool.
Yeah, she is Goliath's puppy raiser.
And that answers the question.
Oh my goodness, they moved to Ohio, so I don't get to see her anymore.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that is so cool that she is on here. That is, that is great.
And I think that answers the question is, do you stay in touch with your puppy raiser? So we kind of know that answer.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. To these puppy raisers, I always call them the mentally irregulars, you know, because they give away these beautiful dogs. But they, as far as both service animals I've had a great relationship with the puppy raisers, you know. They've come over to visit. They've been very kind about that, and et cetera. Laura and her family have been, they were there during graduation. They're a special family, and they did such a great job of raising Goliath to make him the superstar that he is. He is lovable and the big marshmallow that he is because of them and the puppy raisers and what Laura and her family did. So, Laura, I love you and your family very much.
Hey, Tom, this is Hannah. We also have Wrigley's puppy raiser, Katie. We're going to forward this to her as well. So if you want to just say a little hello to her. But
a friend Katie is a superstar. Oh, my gosh. She used to come over and visit, and she was all of about 5 foot nothing and about 90 pounds. And Wrigley, when he got in his prime, weighed in about 80 pounds. And when she would come over, I wouldn't do all of the – stuff that you would normally do. I would sit out in the backyard and Katie would come out and I would leave Goliath. I would take him off the leash and just say, go. And he would go and hit her like a ton of bricks. And he never forgot Katie. And they would roll around on the ground and play. And then she would take him for a walk. And that's the amazing thing. He never forgot Katie and Laura. They never forget. And Katie was another one. She did such a great job raising Wrigley. He was a superstar. I had him for 12 years, and I just love Katie to death. I hope she is doing well. I know she was, at one point was getting into zoology or something like that, but she's really a nice young lady.
Yeah, we just had, I believe they're friends, and with Katie the Razor. She's saying she now works with lions and wolves, so no size animal scares her.
Wow.
I got to tell you something, man. You know, if you saw Katie, like I said, she's 5 foot nothing and probably two biscuits light of 100 pounds, unless she's bulked up by lifting weights or something. But it's hard for me to imagine she's in there with all these big lions and wolves and stuff. But she has always loved animals, and I've been very fortunate with the two families that raised my two guide dogs. They gave me a special gift. I'll never be able to thank them enough. I'm going to get emotional here again, but it's a special gift that they gave me. And in all the puppy raisers, when they do this, they give a very special gift to the end user. Plus, like I said, the force multipliers, everybody that's around them. I don't know what more to say, but I love Katie and her mom and Laura very, very, very much. They just made my life a whole lot better.
Yeah, that's great. Laura mentioned that she's actually walking puppies from in a prison puppy program to cities and different areas too. So you have had an effect on them, and they're still doing good things in the world.
So, excellent.
Yeah. Well, I wish we would have got to more of these questions. Yeah, but sorry people, if we didn't get to your questions, but maybe we'll send them to Tom and he can answer them and we can.
Yeah, or we may have to circle back at some point and do another interview with Tom. Do a follow-up interview.
It can be Goliath and Tom do. You know?
There we go.
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like I said, I can sit and talk to Tom all day. He is an exceptional storyteller, and he's just a wealth of information. And Tom, we just can't thank you enough for giving us of your time this afternoon and giving us a little bit of a better understanding and some insight into your experience.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you so much. Anytime. And like you said, if you want, you can forward me some of those questions. I'd be more than glad to shoot them back to you, answer them, shoot them back to you, and you can forward them however you want to do that. I'd be more than glad to do that.
Oh, excellent.
Sure,
Thank you. Okay. Well, I think on that, we're gonna have to wrap this up because we have gone over time. But again, Tom, thank you so much. Everybody out in the audience, thank you so much for tuning in. We're excited to see that there was so much interest in this, and we look forward to being able to offer similar graduate interviews going forward.
Yeah, thank you, Tom, so much. It's always great to hear your voice and hear your stories and laugh with you. So,
definitely.
Well, thank you so much again, and hopefully we'll get over this these trying times, and we'll be able to start meeting face to face again, because that's
absolutely
a lot more fun too. But
absolutely.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, I miss me, my Tom hugs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Goodbye, Laura and Katie.
Yay. All right.
I love the shout out.
Thanks,
all right, Tom. Thank you.
All right, Tom. Thank you so much. And everybody else, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in.